The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'll finish the series next week around the topic of not-self and the opposites of that and how that's an important part of the cultivation of practice. So the reason I don't want to, I want to talk about something else is because of the momentous events that happened in the last 10 days and our world and our society. And they've had a big impact on me and probably some of you. And it just seems like that should be somehow brought up and addressed or talked about in some way. And what has struck me the most about the variety of things that has occurred and the way that I've been most affected by it is to have witnessed the power of love and the tremendous capacity of human beings to love. And we have the events in Charleston, South Carolina, where horrendous acts of murder happen, but they was responded to with amazing strength and love and forgiveness by people. And for many of us, certainly for me, it kind of bore witness of a tremendous strength of African-American community in this country and how strength of heart, strength of character has developed over centuries of tremendous oppression. Kind of in the face of it, they've responded that way. And to see that love and forgiveness can have such power in that kind of situation is quite inspiring. Shows us an example of what hopefully we're all capable of. And then the power of love in now having finally overcome the ban on gay marriages and the many decades, long time of people who have persevered and their strength of holding up and saying, no, it can't be this kind of limitation on the expression of love, that the variety of ways in which people come together, it's beautiful to have love and to be, have it honored, respected, and in the way that it is now is a fantastic thing for our society to be celebrated. I guess today's the AIDS, the Gay Pride walk in San Francisco, and what a great day for it. And then it says our wonderful new Pope, Pope Francis, came out with this wonderful statement about the environment, where it's also the power of love. The document is littered with statements about love. And he says that human beings are made to love. Isn't that nice? In a document about the environment, the human beings are made to love. And he begins the document by referring to the earth as our sister, Mother Earth. That was quite lovely. And so to tap into this love that human beings are capable of and to choose it is a great thing. And one of the things about these kinds of big events in our society that happen, and also small events, but any event, is how are we changed by them? And so are we willing to be changed by them? We could not change at all. And many times things happen and where people are excited and inspired or horrified, and after some days or weeks, it's kind of forgotten. It disappears, and nothing's really changed in people's hearts. Or we can be changed by contracting and becoming afraid or horrified or angry and contracting in some way. Or we can be changed by expanding. Our love can expand. Our capacity for spiritual growth can grow, and our ability to embrace more people can grow, and these variety of things. And we have a choice, and this thing is one of the important things that makes a big difference in our world, is that we have choices, and our choices we make a difference. And one of the choices we have is our choice to be willing to change in the face of these things, and to change for the better, to expand rather than contract, to develop ourselves and make a difference in the world, than to just be indifferent or forget about it over time. But the willingness to change, the willingness to be affected by things in such a way that we change, means that we can't just be content with our life as it is. And it also means that it might require some effort on our part to be willing to be changed. If we want the world to change, but we're not willing to change, then I don't know if there's any hope at all. But if you're willing to change, then maybe we can talk about the world changing. So how do we change? So I think we have these great examples of people who are stepping forward with tremendous sacrifice, offering forgiveness. I hope you saw some of that, the video of the court proceedings of the survivors of the massacre, the family survivors, offering in the best way they could their forgiveness and their love to the killer. And it was quite touching and very honest. I mean, some of them talked about being angry. Of course they're angry, some of them. But in spite of that, trying to find a way to go forward with, the central tenet of their religious life, to love everyone and to forgive. So I gave a talk Monday night about Charleston and stumbling along, trying to know what to say. And then this morning I read an email from someone in Charleston who listened to the talk. And that kind of was pretty amazing to me, that somehow there's community, there's a kind of conversation going on, right, that I started with someone in that town. And he said, you probably want to know a little bit about what it's like to live in Charleston now, right now. And he said that there was an outpouring. The whole community said it's half African-American and half, I guess, white. And the whole community is an outpouring of love and unity. People are coming together and have gatherings and hugging. And he said it was quite a feeling of pride in the whole city. But then when the media got involved and highlighted some of the other things, they kind of started creating more division or kind of created a different environment. People there said they could have waited. So actually, he said that people in Charleston wished that they had waited about this thing about the Confederate flag, because that was created a different feeling in the community and the ways. And I don't know if that should have waited, but the important thing I thought was the way in which we touch each other. I was touched by the events there, and I said something, and someone in that community responded and inspired me with how that community rallied together and gathered. And he talked about how his family and his kids were among many people who went and bought 9 white roses and brought them and put them, I guess, outside the church. I didn't know there was this white rose thing. 9 white roses. Must have been something to be there. The question is, do I have that strength? Do I have that ability? Will I meet this with love and forgiveness in situations if that I'm in the middle of those things? If I'm being faced with hostility and hate and violence in this kind of way? And American society is filled with stories of people who responded with love. And the civil rights movement is a great one. There's a great quote by Martin Luther King where he said something like, I choose love because hate is too much of a burden. Nice, huh? I kind of have this belief that the greater the emotional impact something has on us, the greater an opportunity it is for us to grow in the wake of it. The greater the opportunity for us to find greater freedom, to find ways to expand our heart even more, to understand something deeper about what it means to be a human being. And I've seen over and over again people who go through tremendous difficulties, emotional difficulties, tragedies, challenges, and the people who step into it as a way of practicing it, step into it with their mindfulness, step into the kind of a, not exactly a willingness, but to kind of a, to address it with honesty and resolve and clarity and looking for the freedom, looking for the love, remarkable changes happen. But there has to be a choice to do that. And do you have the choice? Do you have the willingness? Do you have the desire to be changed by what happens in our society? There's a great story, a great man who lived in Cambodia named Mahagosananda. And Mahagosananda was a Cambodian monk who in the mid-1960s went to learn meditation in Thailand. He practiced with Ajahn Chah. Jack Kornfield knew him. Jack Kornfield was a monk in Thailand. They lived in the same monastery. And I think Jack didn't think too much of him at the time. He was kind of a scholar monk. And he was in his cabin and hut, and he would study a lot. And, you know, Jack was young and idealistic, maybe. And so he didn't really stand out so much who this person was. Because he was living in Thailand practicing, he was one of the very few monks who survived the Cambodian genocide. There were 60,000 Buddhist monks in Cambodia before Pol Pot in the 1970s. And after the Pol Pot period, there were 3,000 left. So almost 6,000 had been killed. So he was one of the survivors, and he was kind of getting being elder by that time. But during that time, there were refugee camps, huge refugee camps along the border with Thailand and Burma, Thailand and Cambodia. And he went there in order to build kind of bamboo Buddhist temples for the Cambodian, you know, their Buddhists. And he would walk between them or travel between them in order to offer some kind of spiritual support. And he did it under a threat because the Pol Pot was still running around and they threatened him, you know, stay away. But he went anyway. And they would build these bamboo platforms, bamboo kind of like temples or something. And Jack Kornfield says he went along and watched some of this. And tens of thousands of refugee camps are huge. Tens of thousands of people would gather around Mahagosananda on these platforms, little temples, and that he would begin chanting. And he chanted a simple chant that's from the Dhammapada. And the chant goes, hate is never overcome by hate. Only by love is hate overcome. And now Mahagosananda had his whole family killed in Cambodia. And so did probably many of the people in the refugee camps had seen and witnessed tremendous atrocities. And to step into that, and with that kind of background, evoke the power of love, to evoke love as an alternative to hate, to say that love is the healing of hate. Hate doesn't heal hate. So to repeat that over and over again. Imagine. So what Jack says, that he's sitting there watching or being present for this chanting over and over again, that thousands of people started to cry. Imagine kind of something was released in that process. Mahagosananda also would travel around Cambodia during that time, visiting the refugee camps or outside. And then also after the Pol Pot left, he returned to the country and eventually became called the Supreme Patriarch, the primary Buddhist leader of the monastic order in Cambodia to help revive Buddhism in the country. But he spent a lot of time walking, right up until, I think, near at the end of his life. He would walk around Cambodia quite a bit. And one of the things he would do is he would pass out copies of the Metta Sutta, the Buddha's discourse on loving kindness to people, which I'll read you. Part of this text says that this is how one should reflect. May all be happy and secure. May all beings be happy at heart. All living beings, whether weak or strong, tall, large, medium or short, tiny or big, seen or unseen, near or distant, born or to be born, may they all be happy. Let no one deceive another or despise anyone anywhere. Let no one through anger or aversion wish for others to suffer. So this expression, may all beings be happy, and this list of all these categories, is meant to be not just people, but all living beings. All kind of creatures are included in our love, in our care, in our desire for their happiness and welfare. And so he would go and teach this, you know, offer this to the Cambodians who had gone through genocide. And then this thing, let no one deceive or despise anyone anywhere. Let no one through anger or aversion wish for others to suffer. I don't know what's a taller order. Is it to love or to not hate? What's more difficult? I mean, if you're going along just having a nice day, I suppose it's not too difficult to avoid hate. But to avoid being triggered with hostility for some people is very hard. When people are threatened, when their family is threatened, when their lifestyle is threatened, their welfare is threatened, when their community is threatened, some people get afraid, some people pull in, some people want to attack, some people get hostile, some people in that threat. And some the threat sometimes is real. It's actually violence that's done. And so, you know, some people feel it's completely reasonable to have hostility because that's how we create the boundaries where we take care of ourselves. But to avoid hostility or not succumb to it or to maintain our love and to treat all people, all beings, as someone who deserves to be happy means that we don't close ourselves up in a narrow boundary of this is my family, this is my little village, this is my people, this is, you know, my country, this is, but rather to have the boundaries open and consider all beings as part of our family. One of the really important parts of the practice of loving kindness is that we take our capacity for love and we start with what we have. We start with the love that we have, whether it's to, you know, the classic way is to ourselves, but apparently here in America, that's a little hard. So the assumption back then, in the old days, is that, you know, it's, of course you should love yourself. That's kind of taken for a given, but our life has become more complicated. I know some people start with their pet. You know, anywhere you can. But you start there, you start where you have it, and then the task, and sometimes the remarkable task, maybe a task of a lifetime, is to take our capacity for love and not to deny any of it, but to expand it. So not deny the love you might have for your family, but can you expand it to your neighborhood? Not to deny the love you have for your whatever your people are, your community, your church, or whatever, but to expand it and keep expanding it. And do the work to include eventually all beings. And clear the instructions in this doing this expansion process in Buddhism is also to do this for our enemies. And it says, the texts say, well, if you don't have any enemy, then you should be content with that. You know, here in the West, when people teach this, you know, include your enemy, the idea of enemy, you know, for some people doesn't quite work here in the West. So the Western teachers now refer to it as a difficult person. So very few of you have enemies, but you can probably think of a difficult person, yourself. And so you want to love that too, open up and include that. It's a remarkable step, this thing. I think it's one of the characteristics of many religions, at least in parts of it, the parts that inspire me the most, is the tremendous call for love, universal love. It's there in Buddhism. The Buddha, I read recently that some people think that the Buddha was one of the first of the religions to begin championing universal love rather than something that's more tribal and, you know, your people, but to open up this way to include everyone. I don't know if it's true, but you certainly find in Buddhism the emphasis on the tremendous importance of love, but the radicalness of it, the thoroughness of it, that goes beyond what we think we're capable of. So loving our enemy, for example, the Buddha said that if a monastic, one of his key followers, does not have love, they are not following his instructions. Love is kind of like foundational, to have kindness, to have goodwill. And then remarkably, in this kind of way that maybe religious people have a hyperbole, you know, just really exaggerate something to make a point, but maybe it wasn't an exaggeration, given what happens, we see what happens in our world. He says that if bandits capture you and begin severing off your limbs, then if you give in to hate, you are not following my teaching. Instead, you should see if you can generate goodwill to those people. Now, is that ridiculous? Is that ridiculous? There's a story that's told many times now of a Tibetan monk who was imprisoned by the Chinese for many, many years, and, you know, probably brutal conditions. Finally was released or was able to escape or something and made his way to Dharamsala to have an audience with Dalai Lama. And the Dalai Lama asked him, were you in danger when you were in prison? And probably meant, you know, was your life in danger or something? And the monk said, oh yes, I was in danger. I was in danger of losing my compassion for the Chinese. Isn't that something? So, was he being tortured? There's been a lot of in the news about this man named now Denmark Vesey, who was one of the founders of the church in that where this killing happened. This church was one of the first African-American churches started in America in 1818. And it was a radical thing for them to start the church because black people, African-Americans, were not allowed to congregate together at that time. And they had a church that was run by white people. And then when the white leaders of the church decided to build a barn or something on top of the black graveyard in the church, that the blacks left that church and started their own. And Denmark Vesey was one of those. And he's been presented as someone who started a revolt or was about to start a revolt and therefore was executed. And now there seems to be some doubt about whether that was really the case or whether it was all kind of trumped up against him. But the remarkable thing in terms of this kind of capacity, I mean, I'm sure he knew what was in store. People who started this church, the St. Emmanuel AME Church, they were arrested. They were whipped. Some of them were given a choice of whether to leave town or stay, get jailed for a month. And some of them decided to stay. You know, that was their community. And so he was tried, and the descriptions of the, I guess, survived from the time of the trial was that he remained remarkably calm and composed and upright through the whole trial. I kind of love this expression, you know, some certain kind of strength of character in the midst, in the face of probably tremendous hostility and atrocities. And so when the Buddha says, you know, even if you get caught by bandits, you get your arms get severed, maybe it's a little bit over the top exaggeration, but these things happen in our world. And what happens to us as practitioners, I hope for all of us, mindfulness practitioners, is we get a first-hand experience, meaning we experience in ourselves the difference between hate and love. And we see the tremendous, as Martin Luther King said, the burden of hate on our own hearts, how challenging it is, how we contract, how painful it is, and how it doesn't serve us. It doesn't help us. It doesn't do any good. It's too difficult to have it. Who would want to do that? And there's an alternative. And the alternative doesn't mean that of love or staying open and not succumbing to hate does not mean we don't take care of ourselves. But maybe we take care of ourselves, we take care of a situation and confront injustice in a way that has a much better and lasting effect on our society. Hate isn't overcome by hate. Hate is only overcome by love. So I think that with all these things, with African-American response to their oppression and how they, their dignity and strength is something that can inspire all of us in our nation. And we can grow and become better people because of it. It's a way of honoring what happened and being changed. To appreciate the beauty and the great value of people who love each other regardless of their sexual orientation, or maybe because of it, for gay people to love each other and over these last decades, over the last centuries, you know, tremendous violence, sometimes to the point of death. You know, it was a frightening thing to come out. And to then people to come out and share their love with our society is a better place because of it. And better place where love is stabilized and recognized and given a place for all of us to share in and to really celebrate what we have now is a way to be changed by it. And then to not kind of feel like, well, it's a done deal, but to realize that there's still limitations and so to support others, to offer our support and our love, and not be content the fact that, you know, a fair amount of people might be liberals who already believe in gay marriage and gay rights and these things, and because we believe in it, we don't do anything. it's not our job, but to offer our support and our love for others. And then the environment. Again, from the Metta Sutta, Discourse on Loving Kindness, the Buddha says, as a mother would risk her own life to protect her child, her only child, so this is where we start with what's close in, what we have, so towards all beings one should cultivate a boundless heart. With loving kindness for the whole world, should one cultivate a boundless heart, above, below, and all around, without obstruction, without hate, and without ill will. So with loving kindness for the whole world, all beings in this world. And so how do we express our love? How do we express our care, goodwill for people on the other side of the globe, for animals and creatures, for the globe itself? Can we love it? And I think this is one of the big tasks that's coming up. Does our instincts towards self-preservation, for our taking care of ourselves, for comfort, for getting what we want, for having material possessions, all these things, is it stronger than our care and compassion and love for the world we live in? And one of the reasons why this is so important now is because we're a global village. You know, I got an email from Charleston, right? Amazing. And to me, to feel how close, you know, the connection might be, is. And these things come back. And so this is the law of karma, the law of cause and effect, the law in which way the interdependent nature of our world is getting clearer and clearer for all of us. And we don't benefit as individuals by being self-serving, to only taking care of ourselves. We've been in the collective commons that we all share. Each of us benefit when we cultivate and care for the commons that we all share. It's a hard lesson to learn. You know, we're take care of myself. No, take care of others. So I'll end with probably the most common teaching that Dalai Lama likes to give. Dalai Lama says, if you want to be happy, have compassion for others. So let's live in this world together and try to find how to love each other and maybe make that a central theme of our life. So thank you. And we have 10 minutes before the end. So ample time, extra time, unbidden time, to be friendly to each other. I know that's, you know, not, you know, it's one thing to listen to a talk about love, it's another thing to, you know, live it. But to those of you who would like, have the time, I think it would be really great before this potluck. Everyone's invited to stay for the potluck, whether you brought food or not, please stay, it's great. But to turn towards the people around you and say hello to a few of them and greet them. And if this is your first time here, IMC belongs to the people who are here, so it belongs to you. So you could say hello. You could welcome. If you're new, welcome the old timer. Thank you.